Some of us are outwardly successful, but inwardly feel unhappy and living a life lacking in purpose and meaning. The Necktie and the Jaguar by Carl Greer can help you discover what's important to you and how to go for it. For more information or to purchase the book, visit carlgreer.com. That's CarlGreer.com. Welcome to Adventures in Consciousness, the interactive show that offers expansive conversation with pioneering new thought teachers and personal real-time guided journeys into the imaginal realm to access your soul's wisdom and discover how to live your greater story. Here is your host, human potentialist, soul mentor, and consciousness guide, Jennifer Ivanko.
So welcome to Adventures in Consciousness, The Conversation. Joining me today is writer, mentor, and consciousness coach, Jeff Vanderkloot. Jeff is a co-founder of Enlightened Journeys and Expeditions and Sourcing the Way. He's a longtime member of the Evolutionary Leaders, as well as the Global Compassion Council of Charter for Compassion International and the Association for Spiritual Integrity. He serves on the board of directors for Alliance for the Earth, Garden of Light, and Source of Synergy Foundation. Jeff is a friend for the spiritual journey and an advisor to love-based business and organization. He is committed to realizing a healed and transformed world filled with people, communities, and entire societies that are deeply aligned with life. Using the science and technology of awakened consciousness, Jeff guides people through the complexities of these times to illumined possibilities. The work creates a subtle field of loving presence, which I know you're going to experience just by being in his presence. And this accelerates spiritual awakening and the flowering of one's sacred capacities in service and in joy. Jeff Vanderkloot, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jennifer. It is truly a joy to be here with you and with all of you.
Thank you. And I'm excited to start with Jean Houston's quote about you. He says, she describes you as a modern day Merlin. This is an archetype, I think, that many people are very attracted to these days, especially that idea of the mysteries and delving into the mysteries beyond this everyday normal state of consciousness. So I'd like to start with where your journey began. What makes this everyday, this modern day Merlin?
Well, and who is this modern day Merlin anyway? I was just reflecting and I had an image come to me, a memory from the 90s, if you can believe it, the 90s. And I was in France in a hotel room and my friends were somewhere else sleeping and it was late and I was awake and I was looking in the mirror and wondering, who's that? And really quite fascinated at what's there, what's behind the eyes, what is this being I see, who is he? So Merlin, well, certainly the world needs a lot of magic these days. I feel that I've been blessed to experience quite a bit and over time have had certain experiences that have activated maybe a bit more, certainly than I had before, been aware of. So there was one experience in particular in 2002, which was quite formative. And I was in the office one weekend because that's where the whiteboard was. And I loved to draw on the whiteboard and think about math and physics, really the deeper roots of math and physics. At that point, I wouldn't say that I was a mathematician or a physicist, but I had studied both in college and had some inklings that there were deeper realities that perhaps we couldn't get to with the current state of our scientific understanding and our logical analysis. Nevertheless, I love to think about physics. So I was contemplating certain kinds of elementary particles and I had an insight that basically is particles that look different to us using our measuring devices appear to be the same when viewed from a higher perspective. You could say a higher dimensional space. And when that idea landed in me, immediately I felt this incredibly strong energy rise from the base of my spine. So there was some kind of kundalini experience happening, but I didn't know the word, and I had no concept or framework for spiritual experiences at the time. But nevertheless, this energy rose rapidly all the way to the top of my head, and I felt that I was lifted out of my chair and then danced around the room. I found myself dancing in a very fluid way, which felt amazing. And I wasn't really a dancer then, and I'm not much of a dancer now, but I went with it because it felt so good. And there was no fear. There was no sense that something is wrong. I just felt that there was truth in the insight and that it would lead to something, who knows what. So I went to the whiteboard and I started drawing equations and my version or rendition of these elementary particles and how they might appear to be the same when viewed from on high and different when viewed from, say, three dimensions. Anyway, this experience of activation, energy activation, really opened up something. It opened up my nadis, perhaps. I'm sure there are different ways of understanding it. And afterwards, I was much more aware that whenever something was really good, I could feel a kind of tingling, warm, maybe rising energy in the spine. And so there was an involuntary registration of the goodness or registering of a yes in my body system. And that was interesting to me, to say the least. So the scientist, the sort of quasi-scientist, because I felt like I had to go beyond the horizon of science as currently practiced, was fascinated. And pretty much I made this my life's mission, really, to explore the possibility of deep wisdom, profound truth, making itself available through the body, through something very tangible. So something intangible becoming visible and experienceable through none other than our sacred vessel. How interesting is that? So as the years went on, it took me a little while actually to truly and fully warm up to this possibility of living in alignment with yes, actually making decisions based on whether I felt the energy. And at some point, a few years later, I think it was 2007, I wrote a blog post called The Signal, which was my coming out announcement that, hey guys, gals, peeps, I've got this thing that I feel, this sensation, and it's really great. And it seems to correspond to good things happening or good decisions. I know I'm on the right path when I feel it. So I'm hereby going to live, basically. I'm going to live my life according to the signal, according to the yes. And as soon as that that blog post was live, I started to have a kind of acceleration in terms of spiritual openings and insights and eventually some awakenings. And life became a flow. Life became much more enjoyable than it was before. There was a lot of suffering, a lot of struggling, difficult, dark times, which changed rapidly as soon as I said yes to life and yes to the signaling, our internal GPS, if you will.
There's a lot of things I want to tease out of just what all that you just said, because there's so much really good stuff there. I wanted to go back to when you got up and you actually started dancing and moving and letting that flow through you, through the body, through that yes you were having. But it was also, isn't it a sense of different parts of you coming together, because you're using the body, the mind, the energy, all of it's flowing together in alignment, right?
And that's very true. Well, at the time, I would have been hard pressed to dance. If someone asked me to dance, I would have been extremely shy about that. Now, granted, I was on my own in this room in the office during the weekend, but somehow you're absolutely right. There was a fluidity, a seamless integration of the body and the mind. And prior to that, my mind was very sort of dominant. And that was one of the reasons I was so miserable.
But you had a curious mind, obviously, because you were searching.
Well, there was good in it, just like Darth Vader.
That's good. You said you didn't have really a spiritual background at that point. You weren't, it was more scientific and mathematic at that point, yes?
Yeah, I'd had some inclinations and had played with Ouija boards and hypnotizing my friends at a pretty young age and having remarkable results. And then my friends sort of freaked out and I no longer had any test subjects, but it was powerful. And So there might have been early indications. I remember at one point at a sleepover when I was maybe 12 or 13, saying to my friends, and the idea was just coming to me then, you know, there's really only one God. Whatever the religion is, whatever we are teaching, whatever we are saying, like we're ultimately saying the same thing. We're talking about the same supreme being. I would have used different, maybe slightly less sophisticated language then. And my friends thought that was a great idea, a great possibility, probably true. It sounds right. And it solves a lot of problems. Well, a week later, after people went off to Sunday school or talked to their parents about, you know, what Jeff said, the feedback was consistent. Everyone said, no, that's not true. You know, my Sunday school teacher says that's not true. Or my parents say, not at all. You know, this other religion, you know, they don't know what's up. I was disheartened, actually. I realized later that was a traumatic experience because I'd had this feeling of truth that would bring peace to the world, you could say. I mean, I had some sense of that even then, that it would resolve so much conflict. And no, my friends, the closest people to me in my life, wanted to have nothing to do with it. So, all right, that had to lie dormant for a while.
And that's beautiful, the way you said lie dormant for a while. In these conversations, and when I talk to people, there's often a very wild childhood with a lot of fantasy, a lot of experiences that, you know, openings. And then there's some event that has you, that's traumatic, that kind of slows it down for a while and allows you to catch up with your, maybe your mind or other parts of yourself to then reveal itself later, you know, and when you have that experience.
Yeah. Well, it was useful that the mind went off and did its thing. And I mean, I'm not othering it. The mind is part of the whole that I am and that we are. But for a time, it was so, so focused and so overbearing. I remember at one point in college saying, I have no use for revealed truth. Like I said it with such conviction. And it's one of those moments, like, methinks thou doth protest too much, looking back. It's like, that was a sign that revealed truth actually is really important. But when I was studying math and really loving it and loving the integrity of the system that has emerged that allows for propositions to be well-formed and studied in a way that many people can agree on. As much as I loved that, I discovered the limitations of that. And it was towards the end of college when I realized I was not going to be a math professor. I was going to do anything else, but it'll have to be an exploration, ultimately, of consciousness. I wouldn't have used the word at that time.
So you mentioned your GPS system, this you developed. I think, and again, in my experiences, we find a way that source communicates with us, and then we acknowledge it, and we start practicing it, and then it grows stronger, and then it opens up even more. And this seems to be, you have a very unique way.
Yeah. Well, the more you use it, the more you have access, and we all have our own way of connecting with the deep wisdom. So some people are very visual, some people very auditory, some people are clairsentient. So initially for me, it was that feeling. Well, the feeling is what got my attention, but actually there's a lot of claircognizance. So the mind again, the mind in its right place is an amazing vehicle. So for me, it's primarily ideas, knowings, whole frameworks that just drop in and there they are. And then they get experientially confirmed through synchronicities. They're confirmed through visions and meditation, or maybe I hear the commanding, booming voice that happens from time to time. And so I'm paying attention to all of the different signals. And when there are many confirmations, then that is certainly a good sign. I like to have multiple ways of knowing agree before making any really big decisions. But even in small decisions, I'm always listening. And what happens is when we're paying attention, when we're curious, when we're noticing the subtle signal, the still small voice, perhaps, we notice it, then we get a little information, we get a little something, some kind of guidance, perhaps, maybe it's a feeling. And then the next step is to appreciate that, to be grateful. Oh, thank you for this profound wisdom from source, from the depths of being. Thank you. And life at that point, in my experience, says, all right, let's dance. And then this dance of gratitude and guidance and loving creativity, co-creativity unfolds. And so the information comes, the guidance comes, and we appreciate that. And then it is important to act on the information, which could involve simply contemplating it and factoring it into whatever decision we're making. It could also involve actually doing the thing that we are sensing called to do. But paying attention and seeing it through, following through on the guidance seems to be key to completing the circuit. And then every time we complete the circuit or the feedback loop gets tighter and tighter and tighter until sourcing or this way of being that is fundamentally in alignment with life becomes a constant way of being in the world. So this is what I mean by sourcing in everyday life, sourcing as a spiritual practice, sourcing as an infinitely practical way of being as well, because there's nothing that we can't inquire into in a deep way and get incredible clarity around. Because so even small things are big and big things are small, like they're all one.
Yes. So it's interesting. You did say it's active. It's not a passive, oh, I got this sign and now, you know, I'll enjoy this wow moment of some intuition or something. It's deep listening and then acting and maybe asking questions and going further.
Well, it started as receptivity because there was no sense of living in a constant flow of oneness, really, a oneness with life and the instantaneous communication between the different layers of being, the seemingly individual self and the flow of life and the transpersonal layers of being, because we're also collective, we're also humanity, we're also the planet, we're also the universe, and we have access to all of those layers. But of course, at the beginning, none of that had ever occurred to me. I hadn't the faintest idea. But I did know that from time to time, I would feel this really beautiful, warm, tingling energy. And that signaled I was onto something. With a little more practice and a little more maturity, I started to have another signal appear, which was a pressure in my left temple. And that was my no. So then I had a yes and I had a no. And then I could start to ask questions and see if I would get a spontaneous response. Do I feel a tingle? Do I feel a pressure? And even if I wasn't asking questions, if I was in a conversation and I started to veer into territory that wasn't optimal, I would feel a pressure in my left temple. And if I kept going, it would become a pain. And sometimes it would be very sharp. And I would know that I had really kind of left the optimal flow of things. And then I'd get back in the current and the pain would be instantaneously gone. So it is, and it was even way back when, a powerful way of staying in alignment. With the yes and no, though, I went a step further, which is to inquire about the truth of things. So somebody says a statement, or I read a famous quote or a spiritual teaching. How true is this? Okay, so let's say on a scale of 0 to 10, and it was a slow process at first, but I would ask, is it 0? Is it 1? Is it 2? You know, and I'd get a yes or a no, and you know, maybe there'd be kind of a muddled feeling, but then I would get a really strong sense of yes, and that would be it. 7, let's say. And then if I'm making a list, okay, so I talk about resonance mapping as an application of what I just described. So I'm making a list of all the opportunities. At one point, I was considering what I would do when I started to visit Seattle. Would I join this board or that board, or who knows? There were lots of cool and exciting things happening in Seattle. So I made a list of about 50 different opportunities, and I went through and used the method, the resonance mapping method. And back then it was very crude, like I said, 0 to 10. And I might get 2 that were 7. So then I'd say, all right, which one's a little bit higher? Is it a 0.0, a 0.1, a 0.2? And so thus was born infinite precision sourced resonance values in numerical terms. And I discovered before long that the universe doesn't play finite. So I would start to get values that were beyond 10, and then beyond 100, and then beyond 1,000,000. And I said, okay, I get it. We're in an infinite game here. And so I started to explore what I call the transfinite realms. And this gets into the esoteric side, which I won't go too far into, but I realized that if I was going to accurately sense the aliveness, the truth, the consciousness of different opportunities, because it wasn't just, is this a good job for me, or is this a good board for me to join? It was, what's deeply rooted in truth. That's what makes it good. That's what makes it right. So I realized I was calibrating consciousness. I was calibrating how profoundly true and rooted in the ground of being an opportunity was. So to do that, I needed to get into the infinite values. And that took me beyond math as we understand it, which I always knew would happen. See, I knew that we couldn't get there with our finite systems. So I'll probably pause unless you have questions about the transfinite nature of
resonance mapping. Oh, I do. We'll save that one. I do want to come back and point that we all probably have a way to tune into a yes and a no within our bodies. I don't know if you've heard of, I think it was Deepak Chopra who mentioned the drinking the tea. Have you ever heard about that? Where you set a different glass of tea for your different options, and then whichever
one. Yeah, I've heard that, not recently.
Yeah. But, I think there's all of us kind of maybe ignore sometimes the no that we're getting, that pain we're getting somewhere in our body that says, don't do this. And, you know, it's wonderful to look at your you call it resonant mapping, but look at a way of testing your own system. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Well, there are some fun ways. I have a friend who, when she has a decision to make, she imagines that she's decided on one of the options and asks to hear the music. So what does the music sound like that represents the outcome of that decision? Is it cacophonous? Is it symphonic? Is it a sweet, simple melody? Is it complex? All of that is information that helps her to understand the nature of the decision that she's making. And then she does the same with the other option or other options, and then compares what the music sounds like. We can do it visually. I have a friend who teaches many templates. One is called the rose template. So you can imagine that you're seeing a rose that represents you in 5 years or you a year ago. And what does this rose look like? And you get really valuable information that way. And the key is that you're not trying to paint the rose, or you're not trying to compose the music. It happens spontaneously and it's just there. And that's how you know it's not your mind playing tricks on you. But the mind gets to do the interpretation. So again, it has its place.
Yes. Yeah. And well, how do you trust? I mean, I guess over time and testing you, that's, and you said you don't pick one source. So that's how you, or one answer, you look for other inspirations to see if it's correct.
I look for corroboration, and that includes with people too. So I have friends who are also sourcing in their own way. So sourcing, by the way, is, you could say, the active version of intuition, where you're in a conversational and ideally continuous relationship with the field of universal intelligence. So I have friends who also practice in their own way. And so if I'm making a key decision and I get a yes, so if I get, yeah, this would be good to check with friends on, then I WhatsApp them or call them and say, okay, here's what I'm considering. What do you feel? What comes to you? And so we can do this for one another. And this way we make collectively wise decisions. Plus, it's fun. It's fun to source the way ensemble.
Well, and I think you touched on, again, the collective. I mean, we're getting into a collective movement, not an individual movement, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And not just human collective, but also complete environment. So sourcing with the tree, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, I have a sense that I can become a tree. So from time to time, I see a tree and I just become that tree, and I feel what it's like to be that tree. And it's not only trees, it can be any other being. And so this is to your point about trusting. If we trust that this capacity exists and is available to us, and we try it and trust the sensations that we have and the knowings that come to us, over time, the capacity becomes clearer and clearer and clearer, and it becomes undeniable that something is there, something is real, that there is a communion with all of life.
And there's the Merlin becoming the tree, right?
Absolutely. Why not? I'm still learning how to look like a tree when I'm doing that.
Beautiful. There's different levels of truth we talk about. You know, you're finding that truth as the individual versus that collective or the source truth. Do you find it, I guess you through your resonant testing, you can tell a different strength to the yes at those different levels?
Yeah, so when I'm resonance mapping these days, I'm interested in what is the full yes? What is the deepest flavor of infinity? Mm. And then I make a list of everything that's a full yes. And then I sequence those items so that they tell a story, number one and number two and number three. They tend to follow and build upon one another. So I'm interested in what's fully true. At the same time, we live in a world that has a whole spectrum of consciousness and ideas and beliefs and teachings, not all of which are true with a capital T, and that's fine. We do have relative truth, and relative truth has its place. The relative reality is, I would say, intended to be a realm of enjoyment, a realm in which the divine enters and has a beautiful experience and gets to know God's self that much more through experience and through all the possibilities, the awakened possibilities, which then means war and some other things tend not to happen in the awakened manifestation. So incidentally, the awakened possibilities tend to have a much higher or much deeper resonance. War doesn't resonate highly or deeply at all. So mm-hmm. it's really not true. The fact that it exists, that's because humans, at least until now, maybe this is going to change very quickly, have had a lot of fear. And so that fear gets outpictured and acted upon, and we create scenarios that are suboptimal and certainly not pleasing to God. On the other hand, you know, we have this thing called free will. So we are learning in the process, and there's negative feedback as well as positive feedback. The resonance mapping, however, takes us very quickly into the bullseye of what is true and aligned with the totality, and then the painful suffering experiences that humanity has been having for a long time tend to fall away. So that's my mission, or one of them, and you shared that in the introduction. That's to see a world where we're actually flourishing and entire societies and civilizations are awake, like enlightened awake, really awake.
And that's where Renaissance comes, where we start having these new visions of that possible, that a world that works, as Jean would always.
Yeah, it's a new Renaissance right now, and it is big time. In fact, it is so big time that we can't understand, I mean, I'll speak in generalities, we don't really understand what's happening. The magnitude of the change is so massive that we can't understand what's emerging in terms of what has been. So it's really helpful to relax into the process, trust that life has our back. There's a deep wisdom, the same wisdom that was speaking through my Kundalini experience and through all of us in various ways is actually guiding us to a much more awakened, enlivened, and harmonious state where we're honoring life, honoring the planet. And we're going to see big changes in this decade where humanity starts to get it. And as soon as we notice that we're starting to get it, it's going to become exciting. Just like I became passionate about the experience of the inner wisdom being expressed, we're going to become collectively passionate about the possibilities for reinventing our society and regenerating our ecosystems and creating new kinds of businesses that are aligned with life, not extracting life. It's going to happen much faster than we think.
And I can feel it, that quickening. It's wonderful because it is a time when we're being faced with so much bombarded at us that we have to, you know, the polarization, the things that are happening around us, that we have to find our inner path, our inner direction that will help create this new world in that vision together. I have to stop for a break here. We are speaking with Jeff Vanderkloot, and I'm very excited to come back in a few minutes to continue the conversation.
Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
There is no greater mystery in life than you. So why not take a fully experiential plunge into the depths of your being to uncover and retrieve all the secrets and wisdom your soul is crying out for you to know? If you enjoy Adventures in Consciousness, The Conversation, you'll love Adventures in Consciousness, The Course. Join Jennifer in this unique 13-week series of journeys specifically designed to unlock the mysteries of yourself. Each week, you'll journey progressively deeper into the meta realm where, freed from the limitations of your mind, you'll get to play and explore the inner and outer reaches of your awareness. The next series of Adventures in Consciousness, The Course, is starting soon. Find out more and stake your place at jenniferivanko.com.
There was an old woman who lived in a shoe. She had so many children, she didn't know what to do. She gave them some broth without any bread and kissed them all soundly.
Lights out. Good
night. And put them to bed. Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Adventures in Consciousness, The Conversation. My guest is Jeff Van de Kloot. And we were just talking before the break about the renaissance that we are coming to and the changes. I'd like to bring up a writing that you did recently about COVID and what you see these times that we're going into. That to me is kind of a start of a major change in our life, obviously. So why don't you talk about that just a little bit.
So at the beginning of the pandemic, right before it was officially a pandemic, I was in India and I was there to lead a journey. And of course that journey got canceled as soon as the pandemic was declared and borders started closing and people couldn't travel. But I knew I needed to be in India for some purpose in addition to the journey, which I was pretty sure would be canceled. And apparently the purpose was to have a conversation with the coronavirus of all things. And I really felt strongly that with all the fear people were experiencing, we were missing something. In fact, we were missing the possibility that the coronavirus might be bringing some gifts. Now I realize it's brought suffering, it's brought death, it's brought misery. And that's very sobering. On the one hand, we can say the evolutionary value of the pandemic is it has made us more mindful. We're paying more attention to how we interact with people. And it's also it's helped us to see where our systems are inequitable and damaging and destructive and totally dysfunctional. So that's great. But when I talked to the coronavirus and asked for its gifts, the number one gift that came to me immediately, and it was like a pressure behind my right ear, so I knew there was a presence, and then I would receive words or images, some sense, like sort of a synesthesia, actually multiple senses that were communicating the essence of the message. And the first gift was slow down. Humanity needs to slow down. And then we experienced the global pause. Other messages, there were six, included essentially we need to connect and form communities of mutual support, so people supporting one another. And people will recall that there were Facebook groups with 30,000 people who were showing up to provide assistance and material support, food, whatever it might be, for people who were in need. So there was so much beauty that did happen. I also asked for the message for humanity, and the coronavirus said, hey, as long as you fight me with fear in your hearts, I'm going to take different forms, which is something viruses do anyway. But this wasn't coming from my mind. I wasn't trying to write as if the coronavirus was speaking to me. I really felt this presence communicating. And it said, I'm paraphrasing, but I'm a compassionate force. I'm delivering humanity from war. If you focus on me instead of fighting with one another, that would be a great thing. And that's the deep opportunity, at least one of them. There was also some information about possible upgrades to our DNA, because viruses do that. They move DNA around, and that's part of their function, and that's normal, and it's fine. There's been a lot of fear about what's happening to our DNA, I realize. So it's not like this time is simple. It's actually quite complicated, and that's why it's an opportunity to raise consciousness, because as we try to work out what's going on with the vaccine, am I for it? Am I against it? Do I get the jab? Do I not? Am I afraid of coronavirus? Is it a great thing for humanity? Maybe it's all of the above. And when we reconcile the opposites, the apparent opposites, we rise in consciousness because we can hold a greater whole. So right now, there's still a lot of polarization pretty much everywhere you look in politics, and not just the virus and the vaccine. But the polarization is so painful that there is this arising impulse to reconcile. And so I'll tell you a brief story of a woman I worked with who we had a session. And after that session, she was going to have a conversation with her children and was essentially preparing to say goodbye because they'd gotten the vaccine. And that meant, therefore, they were guaranteed to die in some period of time. There are all kinds of ideas. Of course, we'll see. Time will tell. But I'm pretty sure that one's not true. And she reported afterwards that she had such a loving conversation with her children. They connected on a deep level out of genuine concern for one another, and it lifted their relationship. So that's a very specific example of how loving connection is possible in polarization. In fact, it is the resolution of polarization. And eventually we find that love, and it weaves us together, and it brings us together, and we become more awake collectively. So we're awakening together thanks to this hyper complex global situation. And that is one of the bottom line messages of the coronavirus, which is, look, I'm a force of love, and we can be friends. This can be a positive experience. And I would add, in the measure that we let go of the fear. So we haven't fully let go of the fear. So we're still experiencing the fearful consequences of our own confusion. And so a lot of the suffering, maybe not all of it, is avoidable. And I've been getting all along that, you know, humanity could take a different path. We could turn, and the pandemic would end much sooner. And a lot of the discomfort could be greatly abbreviated if we chose to let go of the fear. And that's a big step, because, again, I'm generalizing a bit, but humans have tended to identify with the fear and build whole systems and institutions based on fear. That's what's crumbling. And so the big gift, I keep saying the big gift as if there's only one. One of the big, big gifts of the coronavirus is it's showing us where we're afraid. And when we see it, something in us alchemizes, because we don't really want to feel this way. And so the fear dissipates. We become a bit more luminous, a bit more loving. And again, within not very long, the fruits of this awakening, and it's a real awakening, will be apparent. And then we'll be like, yeah, that's tasty. More of that, please. And so there'll be an acceleration.
The interesting, you said a few times there, the choice. I mean, we have this choice. We don't realize, we don't see it as a choice when we're in the middle of it, in the midst of this fear or this. And it seems even, you know, we dance with this fear. We'll slip into it, we'll be in it, and then we realize it again, and then we open up a little bit more and go hopefully a little bit more into love. Quite a enjoying. And it is all about the experience, right? It's ultimately about the experience and choosing what we want to experience.
Right.
Together as a collective.
And we will choose again until we choose love. We will keep being invited until we choose love. So there's an inevitability that we choose love. That is the ultimate choice. And it is happening now for more and more and more people. And I've noticed that there's something shifting on the inside with quite a few people I know. They're becoming more relaxed, inexplicably. people don't know why they're a little bit less angry with their family members. So there's something happening on the collective interior of humanity, and I see it as an erosion of our strong identification with polarized ideas and concepts. And that's sort of technical sounding. What matters is that we're feeling more peaceful. We're feeling less inclined to fight. And at the same time, you look around, you read the news headlines, and you read whole news articles about everything that's wrong in the world. And you know, that's just part of this great working out. And that's one of the ways I talk about these times. It's a time of great working out, huge resolution of karma, we could say, so that we actually have a clean slate to create the societies and institutions that serve life and are supported by life. Because if we don't, well, we're not going to find ourselves around for much longer.
Yeah. I have eternal optimists here, because I feel there's like you said, that we keep being offered to choose the love, and eventually that becomes the choice we want. It seems to me there's so much being sent our way. We have so much information, so many things you can read in the news, and a lot of it's not good, that we are being, again, choosing to come back to what is important, to that conversation that that woman had with her family. That felt good. Do more of that. Beautiful.
And I know that we make it. I know that we choose to love and align with life. In meditation, I've really seen it, and I felt it. I feel it coming. In addition to our intuitive capacities, we can drop into a place where we can feel the entire human family as our extended body and our extended web of relationships. And if we trust that we have the capacity to know what the species is thinking and what the species is feeling, we can know what humanity is preparing to do collectively. And so I can speak from this place, and so could all of you, this place of knowing that humanity is profoundly inspired and profoundly creative and coming up with every kind of solution that is required now. And it's common in the history of inventions and scientific breakthroughs that the breakthrough occurs multiple times, so it co-arises. And that's a hint that actually the invention or the discovery is happening at the level of the species mind. And then it's appearing like mushrooms that pop up all at once here and there. They're connected underground by the mycelial network. But you don't see that. You only see the mushroom. So the mycelial network in this analogy is the mind of the species and the heart of the species, the being and the body of the species. And humanity has said, we're changing. We're going to harmonize with life, not just the Gaian life, but with life beyond, within ultimately a universe that is entirely alive. So we have some really big discoveries to make, but we can't make the really big discoveries while we're still fighting with one another. So we have a little bit of work to do now and a lot of fear to transmute. It's absolutely happening though.
So we think about Renaissance is sometimes that ability to jump beyond this level of thought field that we're in right now, that has that fear, and that things that we're working through into that what's coming next. And I imagine as you're talking, I'm thinking, I'm being inspired by the conversation you had with COVID. And I'm sure you've probably had conversations with the human consciousness, or the human as a collective human beyond in that. Have you written from that place of what a path might be or where we might be going?
I haven't done the same thing with the superorganism of humanity. It's more of a just kind of friendly connection. And so a moment ago, I was feeling into that and speaking from that rather than a memory of some previous conversation or connection. It would be interesting. So I did a little bit of channeling around the beginning of the pandemic because of the initial success with a message from the coronavirus that told me it was a useful thing to do. People wrote from all over the world to say, thank you. This loving message really transformed how I understand these times. I heard from military people, spiritual teachers, like all kinds. And basically there was no negative feedback. So I knew that, a message that really comes from deep love tends not to evoke the blowback of disapproval, for instance. So I knew, okay, this is something that we can do and it's worth doing. So I wrote a few more pieces kind of like that. But then something he said, you're not going to become like the guy who channels viruses or, you know, whatever. So it's much more now about integrating with the different aspects of life and speaking as it rather than from it or having it channel through me. And that this experiment is ongoing to be all of life. And ultimately, in the practice of sourcing, every time we drop down into the root of our being, we become the root of our being. We become the source. We become extraordinarily creative. And so that's the experiment that I'm still running, which is how to become super creative with everyone else, brothers, sisters, other species, animal friends, because we all have the same source. We are all the same source. So what happens when a few of us or many of us go there together and create in a conscious way?
And I was going to say, you know, we in our linear mind, we think that we're dropping into that source. We are that source. We are in the spectrum of being and expanding into being more of that whole spectrum at once, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and that is the genius and the beauty of the human experience, that we can be all of it. And maybe not all of it at once in the linear unfolding of time. We have to kind of tune the radio dial. So like right now, I have to like do practical things as the Jeff guy. And now I'll be, you know, humanity. And now I'll be, you know, one with the coronavirus. That's super fun. And life is just filled with incredible opportunities to experience more life.
Well, there's obviously a lightness to this, the way you're sourcing your day, or your way. How'd you say it? Sourcing the way every day?
Sourcing the way every day. Works for me.
You have this, it's a lighthearted thing. I think it's something, in every moment, whatever we're facing can give us a struggle, a resistance, or it can give us some beautiful path forward or love, like you said.
And even the struggle and the resistance are a gift. And look, I know there are some horrendous situations, and I don't want to minimize, and I don't want to dismiss like the real challenges that these times have presented us with. And I will offer another analogy, which is the butterfly. When the butterfly has gone through its metamorphic process, and it's still in the chrysalis, but it's ready to come out, it starts to stretch its wings. And of course, the chrysalis is very resistant. But if you as a kind-hearted person came along and cut open the chrysalis to help the butterfly out, it wouldn't have the strength to fly. So challenges can be gifts, and our challenges can be way less severe than they have been. And that's the work as well, to become conscious enough that we don't need to learn through fear and pain and anguish and desperation.
Well, and I appreciate people such as yourself who are really living this experience, this the way we could live, the way we can be sourced, as a touch point for the rest of us to connect with. On that, I'd love to speak a moment about what you're doing now in your practice and how people can get in touch with you.
Oh, sure. Well, so the easiest way to get in touch with me is to go to the website, jeffvanderkloot.com, and also enlighteningjourneys.com. So Enlightening Journeys is one of the businesses. It's a spiritual business. It's a spiritual enterprise. We're offering, at the moment, online journeys, and we just started a 7-week online adventure called Homecoming, where we are awakening together. And as Ram Dass said, we are walking one another home to the knowing of our true nature, to the knowing of that which never left home in the first place and has always been home. So we are coming back to ourselves, really our true, true selves. Our first session was this past weekend, and it's not too late to join the adventure, but go to enlighteningjourneys.com and you can read more about it. It will be a life-changing experience, whether you are advanced in your practices or relatively new to the spiritual journey, because at any moment on the journey, we can decide to pause. Thank you, coronavirus, and and drop into the roots of being. So that's what we're doing, and we'll be doing it until early December. And if you've got any questions or any comments or any ideas for how to make it even more amazing, you can message me through my website. Again, that's jeffvanderkloot.com.
Beautiful. And are these adventures on, are these journeys in like a Zoom experience, or how are they done?
Yeah, we're Zooming the way as we source the way. And at some point we'll be journeying in the physical world as well. In fact, we had every plan to do so. We were going to India. We were going to the Bosnian pyramids in 2020. And of course, none of that happened, but we'll be back on the road before long.
The Bosnian pyramids are an amazing place. Have you been there?
Oh yeah, quite fascinating, quite controversial. But the key is that the energy of the place is so loving and so clear. Whether they're actually pyramids, whether they were actually constructed, is much less important to me than what opens up in the presence and in the place. And also Bosnia is a place where there has been much suffering. Not long ago, in the mid-90s, early in mid-90s, there was the very unfortunate breakup of Yugoslavia, which, well, maybe the breakup was necessary, but the violence was not. And people suffered, and their brothers and sisters fighting. And the thing is, though, Bosnians are embodying the other side of that conflict. So that's why you feel the love. You feel the reconciliation. You feel the possibility on the other side of the human travails.
I was walking through that, you know, through the valley and through up the pyramid, or this space, feeling that just really in a very light, high space, not realizing on the side of the building I was passing, there were bullet holes from the conflict. So,
yeah, a sobering reminder.
It was an amazing place. Well, Jeffrey, thank you so much for this time. And I hope
you,
I could check out your journeys. I think that sounds wonderful. So we look forward to spending more time with you in the future. Thank you.
Blessings and love to all.
Blessings.
Take care.
And my guest has been Jeff Vanderkloot. I hope you will take time and check out his website. Again, if you're interested in continuing the journey in the adventures with me, we have a course, a journey through time. If you go to my website, there are a few experiences you can do for free. I think I have 12 journeys there that are time past, time present, and time future. So that would be at jenniferivanko.com. And namaste. Have a beautiful day. Thank you.